Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, August 20th, 2013, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-host for the evening, Anastasia. Lavendar is on special assignment this evening, but she'll be back with us next week. Well, this week is the anniversary of August Harmonic Convergence of 1987, so you may be experiencing activations related to that evolutionary event. That means pay attention to any high strangeness, as it may lead you to further understanding. And here's an example. We originally had scheduled Christine Day as our guest this evening, but she was called away unexpectedly yesterday, so I called Craig Campobasso to see if he could join us. He was our guest 2 weeks ago, and we had such a massive, wonderful response from our listeners that we were eager to have him on again. So as it turns out, Craig was to be on another radio show tonight, but that was also canceled. So he was not only available, but delighted to come back for part two of Stranger at the Pentagon, which is the name of the short film based on the book by Dr. Frank Stranges. Craig has written the screenplay, produced and directed a true story that will absolutely thrill you. So it seems that it was by design that Craig is back with us again tonight. He's been a successful Emmy-nominated casting director in Hollywood for 3 decades, with credits including many major movies that you've seen. He's also just released his book, Autobiography of an E.T. Saga, I Am Tehran, which he'll be talking about. Check out his websites, craigcampobasso.com, and that's CraigCampobasso.com, and Autobiography of an E.T., that's OFANET, Autobiography of an E.T.com, and StrangerAtThePentagon.com. At the top of the show, it's the Starseed News segment with Anastasia, keeping us up to date on topics of interest to Starseeds and sharing emails from our listeners. Well, we've gathered most of the next soul group to go with us to Arkansas to dig for Atlantean crystals, experience crystal activations, and reconnect with soul family. The date is October 8th through the 14th, and if you have 25, 26, or 27 degrees of Taurus or Scorpio, Aquarius or Leo, Capricorn or Cancer on your natal or progress chart, you have the rites of passage to participate. We're still searching for 4 more members of this soul group, so if you feel drawn by this, you can learn more if you send an email to crystals@starseedhotline.com. We'd like to thank Chris for hosting our switchboard this evening, and you're welcome to call in with comments or questions. The number to dial is 917-889-8292. And remember to press 1 on your keypad so we know you want to come on the air. If you like our show, we'd appreciate your support by clicking follow on our show page. And if you're joining us for the first time, our main site is starseedhotline.com, where you can find a lot of vital information for Starseed in our vault of knowledge, and the entire site has been coded for Starseed activations. We have a forum for Starseeds at starseedhotline.ning.com, and we'd like to thank Rose and Tammy for their great work and dedication on behalf of our Starseed forum. You can also find us on iTunes if you'd like to download our shows to go, or download them right from our show page archives. Now, we'll get started in just a few moments, but first I'd like to let you know that if you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. The Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings and your natal astrological chart. And the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone session available with Lavendar, Anastasia, or myself. Remote healing sessions for people and pets are also available with Tammy. And if you have a birthday coming up, wouldn't you like to know when your 10 hours of power will occur? You can request your solar return timing on our site, and please allow at least 2 weeks ahead of time to make sure that you do get it in time. And if you'd like a stage two reading to interpret those energies, beyond just knowing when the window is, make sure you book it about 2 months before your birthday, because we do have a waiting list. So now I'd like to introduce my co-host, Anastasia. Hello.
Well, good evening. Hi, Ariel. Hello, Starseed listeners. It's great to be with you tonight. It's going to be another good show.
Absolutely.
And yes, you bet. And then we'll start our tonight's news by talking about the sun, as we usually do. According to NOAA analysts, a coronal mass ejection hurled into space by an M3-class solar flare on the 17th of August will probably miss Earth. They say Earth will likely, though, pass through the wake of the CME after the cloud itself passes by, and they say this could trigger polar geomagnetic storms, as usual, despite the CME being off target. Now, they say high-latitude sky watchers should be alert for auroras on August 20th through the 21st. That's today and tomorrow. So those of you that live up north, even as maybe Minnesota, Canada, places like that, high-latitude areas, watch out for auroras tonight. And an interesting thing happened. A small comet plunged into the sun this morning, and just before it arrived, the sun expelled a magnificent, I saw a photo of this, it was beautiful, a full halo coronal mass ejection, made a beautiful ring around the sun. And that explosion came from the far side of the sun. Now, people wonder, of course, if sun-diving comets can trigger solar explosions. But what the experts say is that there is no known mechanism for comets to spark solar flares, because comets are thought to be too small and fragile to destabilize the sun's magnetic fields. That's a mighty big magnetic field around a very big star. And they say that the comet was, this particular comet that dove into the sun was millions of kilometers from the sun when the explosion happened. And believe me, the heat just gobbled it up. It got fried. So anyway, they're really watching the sun all the time. They just find all kinds of interesting stuff going on up there. And I guess maybe some of you have heard about the floods in Russia. Wow, they have really had some tough times. Up to 100,000 people may be evacuated from the flood-hit regions in Russia's Far East. Water levels at local reservoirs have already reached all-time historic highs, and officials say that the floods are raging in the area, and they just expect it to continue rising even further. They're affecting over these waters, these high waters, are affecting over 32,500 locals in over 5,000 homes. And they say that over 17,000 residents have already left the area over the disaster. Russia has really been really traumatized with these floods. You see photos of them on the internet. And worst floods in 120 years, they say. So, and I guess you probably heard, it's been on mainstream news, that the Philippine floods have paralyzed Manila, the capital of the Philippines. They say that a few people have died after torrential rain engulfed parts of Manila, where neck-deep water swept through homes and forced thousands into emergency shelters. Now, the National Disaster Risk Reduction and Management Council, wow, they need to shorten that up. Anyway, this government agency said the mountainous areas to the north of the main island were also experiencing floods of 6 feet, and following those downpours that occurred over the weekend. So Philippine floods and Russia floods, and just the opposite of water, we have fire, because in Idaho, this massive forest fire is threatening luxury resort homes, and they say that more than 10,000 homes are threatened by this absolutely furious, they're calling it an angry fire, wildfire in Idaho, and that includes the houses of Arnold Schwarzenegger, Tom Hanks, and Bruce Willis. Even after they initiated an all-out ground and air attack, which failed to stop the blaze for spreading to more than 126,000 acres, and this is a report by the U.S. Forest Service. Now, the fire has been burning for more than 12 days and scorched an area larger than the city of Denver. It's already forced over 2,000 homes into evacuation, mandatory evacuation orders. So that is still going on as we speak. And in Japan, which we frequently cover because of Fukushima, Japan has a volcano going off. And it's the 500th eruption this year of a volcano called Sakurajima. And this last eruption lasted about 50 minutes. Now, this volcano has been producing just hundreds of little explosions a year, but Sunday it erupted in one of the biggest explosions in decades, they say, and perhaps the largest eruption since 1914. It buried a village in just feet and feet of ash. And they say the plume reached 16,500 feet, more than 3 miles, before settling down over homes and businesses on that in that area. So that's a big deal. And they even say that they have spotted magma flows coming from it. So, and we sometimes talk about water shortages, and this was in the news just a couple of days ago. In a surprising precedent, dam operators on the Colorado River have decided to cut the amount of water released over next year from Lake Powell. Now, Lake Powell and the water from the Colorado River supplies millions of homes in Las Vegas and, of course, large farms in Arizona and California. It's critical to the water supply of the Southwest. Well, the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation said it will reduce the flow out of Glen Canyon Dam by 9% starting in October, just a couple months away. And homeowners and farmers, they say, will still get the same amount of water as they do right now. But they're saying that this decision highlights the likelihood of future water shortages. Now, they had photographs of this on the Internet, and I used to live in that area, and I've never seen anything like it. The water in the dam is down way, way low. I mean, it's shocking. Used to go out there and look at that water, that beautiful, gorgeous blue water, high up on the mark, on the water mark, just full, burgeoning with water. Now it looks like it's down just to the eyeball, about 50%. But people are saying, in fact, a man named Peter Gleick of the Pacific Water Institute in Oakland said that he views this as another serious warning to users of the Colorado River that water shortages are going to be a problem and that we're headed for big trouble. So, anywho, that is a concern, but that's what's going on. And heads up on that. Well, you know, I should have brought this little article up at the beginning of summer, because I know that none of us like to get mosquito bites, and none of us particularly that listen to this program appreciate pesticides on our skin. And there are some wonderful natural ways to repel mosquitoes and also fleas. And I'm really into this, so I wanted to share this with Starseed listeners. And, you know, DEET has been used for so long in insect repellent, and it's one of the things that we think works, but it's just so toxic. When you get cutter and off insect repellent, they're just loaded with DEET. And so there is a natural, healthy, holistic way to keep insects out of our off our clothes and out of our lives. And one of them is lemon balm. And lemon balm is a plant that you can grow yourself, and it's very inexpensive. It's probably $3 a plant. And it has a lemony aroma. It's somewhat similar to lemon verbena and citronella. And like I say, you can plant it in your garden, but it contains high levels of a compound called citronellal, A-L, instead of citronella, which is what we're used to. But bugs don't like that lemony smell, and they will stay away from it. And it is really good to use to repel mosquitoes and also fleas. And the way you do it is you crush the fresh leaves and just rub them directly onto your skin, especially around the ankles, you know, where the bugs usually bite you. And that lemon scent will keep them away. So that's a very healthy way to keep bugs off of you. And there's some more plants that repel biting bugs. And, of course, you all know about citronella. And you can grow your own. And I didn't realize this until recently, but it's a grass-like plant that grows up to 6 feet tall. And so if you live in the right climate, you can plant that in your yard and use the plant to rub on your skin, just like the lemon balm, to keep away bugs. And catnip, surprisingly, has been shown by studies to even be more effective. Can you believe this? More effective at repelling mosquitoes than DEET. And it also repels cockroaches. So we can appreciate that if we live in cities. And they say just crush the leaves of the catnip and rub onto the skin or scatter it under cupboards or wherever else you want to keep bugs from crossing the threshold into your house. And another plant that works really good, you guys, is marigolds. Now, when you plant marigolds in your garden, and those of you that do like planting and gardening will probably already know this, that marigolds do repel garden pests and will keep mites and bugs off your tomatoes and other plants. And in addition, marigolds are edible, and they add color and flavor to salads. And so that's kind of a fun thing to plant. So they're edible, and they're also a bug repellent. And lavender, which we all like lavender. And when we grow that around the house, it will keep bugs away. It'll keep bugs away from the foundation of the house if you plant it along your flower beds or along the foundation. And when you scatter lavender around the house, not only does it smell nice, but it is also an insect repellent. And lastly, peppermint. Now, bugs don't like the scent of peppermint, so when you crush up the leaves and rub it on your skin, they'll stay away. And it also serves as a double-duty itch relief if you do happen to get bitten. So we have lemon balm, citronella, catnip, marigolds, lavender, and peppermint, all wonderful ways to repel bugs. All right. Now, remember Lavendar mentioned last week about the mystery priest that showed up at that crash scene and then vanished? You remembered her talking about that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, there was a report that they found him. Actually, he came forward by posting his identity in a Catholic news site. And this whole story began on August 4th after a man, hit somebody in a head-on car crash. One man hit another car in a head-on crash. And in the days that followed, the tale of this faith leader disappeared, went viral on the Internet. But now this man, who brought calm upon the situation and helped the rescue workers, has been found. And a press release from the Diocese of Jefferson County confirmed it was a Reverend Patrick Dowling, who was a priest that works with the diocese, is the person that showed up at the crash site. And so, anyway, that was a real person who happened to wiggle his way in at a time of crisis. No one saw him approach. They were all absorbed, and he went and commented and tried to help the person in the car, and then he left. Normal ways, didn't just disappear, so it was a real person. So, okay, well, our last story for tonight is about Gmail, and I know a lot of people use Gmail, but you know, there's been a lawsuit against Google about privacy issues on Gmail. Now, Google has said that no one using Gmail or emailing a Gmail account or holding a Gmail account should expect the content of their correspondence to remain exclusive. Now, this class action lawsuit complains that when Google reads emails in order to display targeted ads, it encroaches upon wiretap laws on a federal and state level. But Google says, no, we don't. As reported by Consumer Watchdog, Google's reply is this, quote, "Just as a sender of a letter to a business colleague cannot be surprised that the recipient's assistant opens the letter, people who use web-based email today cannot be surprised if their emails are processed by the email provider in the course of delivery. Indeed, a person has no legitimate expectation of privacy in the information he voluntarily turns over to third parties." So we all need to know that as we use these providers for email, something that we need to be aware of. They're serious about this. They don't think there's a problem with it. They're openly admitting that they process email and will scan contents. So the Consumer Watchdog's privacy director says that people should take Google at their word, and they say if you care about your email correspondence privacy, just don't use Gmail. So, that's tonight's news. And I've left plenty of time for this great show that's coming up.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Anastasia.
Thank you. It was fun.
I'm just really happy to hear about these natural insect things because, and at the same time, you know, I live in Georgia, and we have had rain almost every single day for months.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And with Russia and the Philippines flooding at the same time, other places that don't have enough water, it doesn't, it seems like we should give them some of ours because our lake is overflowing.
You know,
but
Ariel,
the mosquitoes are just horrendous this year.
Yeah, they really are. And they are here, too, where I live. Yes. And so we do need to find natural ways. And you know, the insects become resistant to pesticide. We know they have environmental impact, all kinds of things. I mean, our ancestors didn't have DEET, and they managed. And a lot of these things have been lost to our, you know, present consciousness. But I've really been digging into the use of herbs a great deal over the last few years. And I'll tell you, it's just amazing because the earth does provide healing cures for every ill that we've got. We just have to know what the plants can be used for, how to connect with them, and how to use them. But the most wonderful medicine chest is right outside our front door. And I know a wonderful herbalist that lives in my area, and she says this. She says that the wild plants that grow in your area, and I might have mentioned this on an earlier program, forgive me if I'm repeating myself, but she said that the earth itself will respond to what it knows and its consciousness is coming up that people are going to need later in the season. For instance, it was a year where there was a particular abundance of wild violets, just fields and fields of these most beautiful purple wild violets. They were in such abundance. And she told me that that was the year that they grew, particularly because it was going to be a bad year for viruses and colds. Sure enough, happened just like she said. And being an expert herbalist, she knows how to use those plants to treat such things. I don't, but she does. And so the earth itself will respond, you know, to what's coming up by what she produces in the plants and flowers and herbs and even things we consider weeds like dandelions, which are not weeds at all. They're actually very nutritious and wonderful medicine. So anyway, I know that our Starseed listeners are going to be interested in that, and it's just really good that we all get familiar with the you know, use of plants and herbs and edible wild foods and get connected to this wonderful life all around us. It's just a marvel. The more I learn, the more I want to learn, and there's so much to it. All of you young people out there, get started early, because it's a long education curve to learn about these plants, but how wonderful it's going to be, and it's such a lost art. It's time to resurrect that so we can use it in the future when we begin a new, better society. It's
absolutely
going to be very, yeah.
Yeah.
So, anywho. I'm looking forward to tonight's guest.
As are the rest of us.
Is he available? Is he here?
Oh, yes. Greg is here. Greg is
okay.
Here. So, Anastasia, thank you so much for the Starseed News this week. And I am right now going to introduce our wonderful guest, Craig Campobasso. Welcome, Craig. Craig, hello. Are you on mute, sweetheart?
Wait, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
There
you. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, you know what? I had mine muted. Sorry.
Okay. It happens all the time.
I know. Well, I muted it so, because I never know if the background noise, if, you know, it comes through the radio show. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
anyway, how is everybody? And Anastasia, that's always great. I always love hearing the beginning news. That was terrific.
Thank you so much. Yeah. We're doing great, aren't we, Ariel?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We're really glad to have you back
well.
Tonight.
Yeah,
yeah,
we can talk about some new stuff as well.
Yeah, well, you know, I do want to get to the new stuff, because I know that last time you were on, right like 5 minutes before the end of the show, we started talking about something that was going to be another whole show anyway, so that's why we were like anxious
right.
to have you back on. But it's just so curious how the door just opened up for tonight for you coming on, so I have to pay attention to those kind of things.
I know. See, your other guests had to go somewhere, and then I was scheduled for a different radio show tonight, and through a course of events, that got canceled, and the minute that got canceled, you called me.
Yeah.
I think it's divine intervention.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we get into all the things that we didn't get into last time, if you could please, just in case there are people listening that have not heard that show yet, well, if we could just kind of recap a little bit and tell us a little bit about your friendship with Dr. Frank and his experience with that led to his writing Stranger at the Pentagon.
At the Pentagon and all of that, sure. And what I'll do is right off the bat, I'll just give off the website. So if people are listening, they can also look at the website. It's just strangeratthepentagon.com. And just put things in perspective for everybody, I am the person who is doing the short film at the moment and then the feature-length film to Stranger at the Pentagon. So, and that all came about, I originally read the book in the 80s. It was first published in 1967. And the thread of the book is about a created being named Valiant Thor who came to Earth on March 16th, 1957, with a divine design to give to President Eisenhower and Vice President Richard Nixon. And he met with them on that day, and that was a Saturday, by the way. It was also Pat Nixon's birthday. And he was immediately put on VIP status, where they would review and peruse the proposal over a period of time, and the time allotted was 3 years. So, and the design basically was to eliminate sickness, disease, poverty, and how to prolong life, and it was to be implemented throughout the United States first and then the rest of the world. So needless to say, the you know, in the end, the proposal got turned down, and Valiant Thor actually left on March 16th, 1960, 3 years later. So the short film and the feature film, the short film is selected scenes of the main thread of the feature-length film. And the feature-length film just deals with what happened while Valiant Thor was at the Pentagon for 3 years, you know, under the Eisenhower administration, and, you know, his interactions with the government and, you know, everything else that went on, his friendships and, you know, those kinds of things. So we are saying the movie is inspired by a true story. You know, it is a motion picture, so we do take some, you know, dramatic license like all motion pictures do. But of course, the main thread is there. The spirituality is there as well. And, you know, it's it'll be one of the few films, I think, that came out of this Space Brother Sister era, which we'll talk about a little bit later, in the George Van Tassel era as well, which Dr. Frank was a part of. So there were many people who were having communications with beings from other worlds way back when, and it was more open and more prevalent back then. They used to have space conventions about it where these people would talk and, you know, et cetera. So, but then getting back to Valiant Thor, he returned on exactly 1 year later, March 16th, 1961. Sometime after that, he contacted Dr. Frank again, and their friendship lasted until Dr. Frank's death, which was in November of, is it 2010, I believe? 2008. God, time flies. Jeez.
Yeah.
2008. Oh, my God. It's amazing. But anyway, I met him in, I met Dr. Frank in 2001 and became fast friends with him. And one thing led to another, and I began to write the screenplay to Stranger at the Pentagon and sat with him. You know, I told him the actual book Stranger at the Pentagon, because it is all these vignettes of things that happened over a long course of years, really wasn't, you know, screenplay material, but that in with me sitting with him and listening to all of his stories over all the years of visiting Victor One, Val Thor's craft and the starship and interacting with all of those beings, which we'll discuss. We'll get into all of them a little bit later on and what they do. How enlivening and how enriching and how exciting it is going to be, you know, for filmgoers to actually start seeing a film, you know, that is based on science fact. Of course, it's left up to the viewer to decide, even the book is. Everybody, I think, is ready to start, seeing something different. You know, we've gone everywhere in films. You know, there is no other place to go but, you know, to now start bringing this type of information into the planet. So, and I know all the starseeds are ready with lots of stuff that they have as well. And, once things start rolling with these type of projects, you know, there'll be a demand for them. So.
Right. Yeah. And it's really a wonderful trend to witness the beginning of, because up until now, Hollywood has really gone into the, you know, the violent, the, you know, invaders from space, you know, scary, ooh, kind of
right.
pictures. I mean, with the exception of, you know, Close Encounters and E.T.
And E.T.
For the most part, Hollywood has really been projecting a not true image, and it'd be wonderful for your film to be the first one to kind of break out. And like you said, once Hollywood can see that it sells, then the doors will be open, because there are a lot of stars holding a lot of stories that would make excellent movies.
Right. So, oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I've met many, other contactees as well. And, you know, they've got lots of projects ready to rock and roll. So, you know, they're working on everything diligently. And, when this gate opens, you know, people are going to be clamoring for all kinds of new and exciting stories, you know, from the universe and star seeds and, you know, all of that that's going on.
Right, and movies that are uplifting, entertaining, and spiritually awakening.
Yes. Yes.
Exactly. I just love to see that. I love things that make you feel good about the future.
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. You know, when I had just finished writing the script and I had, you know, a couple of drafts, I gave it to, a friend of mine, that I knew, you know, but not too well, which was good because I wanted an honest opinion. And she actually came back to me and she said that she actually wept because she had never dreamed that there were actual people like this out there helping us here. She on the inside had felt helpless and, you know, like a giant burden was placed on her, you know, and it really just sort of uplifted her to a thing. And at the time she has two boys, and boy are those boys, she's a starseed and her boys are like major starseeds, and she wanted to share it with them, and they were teenagers at the time. And so the boys loved it, and they loved Valiant Thor. They resonated with him, and so they wanted me to come over for dinner so that they could ask me questions, you know, about everything. And when I went over for dinner, they had about 100 questions. It was so great, and they were just firing them off one after the other. They were like soaking it up. They just loved every minute of it. And I just thought that was really neat. So,
did they hit you with some curveballs?
They just wanted to know, everything from sexuality to, you know, how the craft ran and if they went to the bathroom, like, I mean, you know, the normal stuff. You know?
Yeah, I can see teenage boys wanting to know that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it,
so
it's
trying
really...
to, you know, go through the various, you know, incarnations of the different beings and bathroom habits was quite fun.
Well, you know, it brings an image of a familiarity, of they're not so different from us, apart from having evolved and left behind the, you know, the separate
ego.
Ego, yeah. But they are humanoid, and once you just tell, I mean, physically humanoid, and from what planet? Would you like to quote that part?
Well, some of the Victor 1 crew are from Venus. Teal is from Venus. Valiant Thor is from Venus. They all live on the interior of the planet. The rest of the universe is also populated with things. Everyone lives on the inside of the planet, and what they do is they harvest, you know, they sort of make it where there are different floors, and, you know, it's like a giant spaceship, like Earth is a giant spaceship, you know, and they don't, you know, they live on the interior because what they do is they control the weather, they control the temperature, they control everything there. They make synchrotron skies. So even though your sky might be, you know, 100 feet in the air, it's actually they have the actual mathematic calculations, if you will, to make it become infinite, and at the same time, they can, that sky, meaning a synchrotron sky, can go from day into night. So what you don't have is all of the universal outside influences like we do here on Earth. So when you sort of think of it in that, you know, respect, you know, you think, wow, they're pretty smart. You know, because, you know, Anastasia was talking about fires and flooding and, you know, and all of these things, you know, happen here, earthquakes, all of that. Even on the interior, the way that they have the resounding fields, if there is an earthquake, it doesn't affect their areas. So,
the environment that, I mean, if you were there, you would never know you were inside a planet.
No. You would never, ever know. They have that actually on the Starship, too, which is, you know, 14 miles long and 7 miles wide up in the atmosphere here, which is also a part of the Victor-class crew and Valiant Thor. I think there's 287 locations where the Victor class saucers are stationed. You know, like, for instance, the North and South Pacific, there's 38. Japan, there's 29. The USA, there's 48. Or in 48 states, there's 21 craft. So all over the world, they're stationed, and they monitor and all of that kind of thing. And and they're all connected to the Starship, by the way. And the Starship sends out beams, and they're all hooked up to the beams. And they travel on the beams. It's all by beam drives and all of, you know, it's. I wish I fully understood the technology, you know, when you see it, when they show it to you and you see it, but then trying to describe the mechanics behind it, you know, like,
yeah.
it's hard to relate that, but... But, you know, it's, you know, but they travel on these beams and everything is set from the Starship, you know, down here. And the Starship, you know, Starship actually has several levels as well. And on those levels, there are also synchrotron skies and there are forests and waterfalls and, you know, and babbling brooks and wildlife. And, I mean, everything. You don't even know that you're not on a planet, even if you're on a ship. So,
right.
You know, all of the planets basically are ships. You know, they
uh-huh.
you know, we're in a stationary ship. So.
Right. Well,
you know,
I'm a huge Star Trek fan.
Yes.
And when you're describing this, do you remember an original Star Trek episode, excuse me, called For the World is Hollow and I Have Touched the Sky? And it's about...
No.
Oh, my God, Craig.
Oh, I don't remember that one.
It's the original Star Trek, and they go to an asteroid that's on a collision course with a populated planet, and it turns out that there are people living inside the asteroid that do not know that they are on a, a celestial body that's underpowered. And the navigation.
Oh, wow, that's great.
The navigation system went, but there was sky. I mean, everything that you are describing, and this one old man tells the secret that he went out and climbed the mountains, even though it was forbidden. And when he climbed the mountains, he was able to actually touch the sky and see that it was a ceiling. So, it's all there in Star Trek.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's really cool. That's a really good storyline right there. That's terrific. I'm gonna go find it on YouTube.
Yeah, Gene Roddenberry, he was definitely a contactee with the right stuff.
Yeah.
And there's actually a book out.
Yeah, he admitted it too. He admitted he was receiving stuff. So.
Yeah, I kind of see you as the next generation of him because. Bringing Star Trek, depicting a world without poverty, where diseases can be cured, and all that amazing future world that, you know, you were kind of doing that again on the next level, because this is where Star Trek was, you know, fantasy at that time. This yours is based on a true story. So,
it's based on a true story, yes, and so it's where that sort of picks up and readies the world to join with Universal Society, you know. So, and that happened, you know, on December 21st. Spaceship Earth did a galactic synchronization where all the planets lined up in this galactarian alignment. And that's when it began. So now the Earth is readying itself to join with Universal Society. And so they're spiritually, everyone here with all the star seeds and everybody helping to raise up the consciousness and all of the people around us through just working on ourselves on a daily basis is now... is coming true so that people understand, you know, that their emotions drive their thought patterns and that they're in control and they have the power over their thoughts. But their thoughts are also attached to the ego and that they have to learn discernment with the ego and what it is there to do as the teacher. And when you start to look at it and you become awake and you see it from that standpoint, then you understand that when you use your heart to work in conjunction with your mind, your duality is starting to merge and you become at one with God and you start to ready yourself for, you know, the next step, which is Christ consciousness, or if you want to call it cosmic consciousness or universal consciousness, which is what Valiant Thor and all of the other, fully conscious beings are in coming here as well. But there are, you know, all of them also, too, have different levels of consciousness, depending on how old their soul history is. And then in the angelic kingdom, you know, there are certain, you know, the certain classes of angels have certain knowledge that fully conscious beings don't have. So, you know, but there's a hierarchy to it all. Although they say that there is no hierarchy to it all.
Well,
but, you know, that
implies
they all work in unison with each other. It's more of a consciousness tier kind of thing, you know.
Right,
so.
Right. It's just about a power structure. It's about consciousness and, you know, the...
it's about harmony. Yeah, that's right.
It's like school. And you consider,
yes,
you know,
the universe is a giant school, and we're an elementary school on Earth.
Yeah.
You know, we're in elementary school learning duality, so that when we join with Universal Society, we can, you know, we will therefore join with learning so much more that we've never even dreamed of out there in this great big universe. And then, guess what? There's other universes and super universes, and, you know, I mean, it's unfathomable, you
right.
know.
Right. And what about special classes?
Meaning?
Meaning, aren't there classes where you can go at night? Night school?
Oh, yeah. Yes, yes. the night classes. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, I'll sort of give you guys a little rundown of the Vice Commanders. And then, you know, Vice Commander Dawn he's in charge of what we would call strategic tactics, which is like if they're working on a negative world, they work with tactics to disseminate energy, dark energies that are trying to take hold, or if there was, you know, things that were being shot at them, they have deflector weaponry. They don't have weapons, but they have deflector weaponry that just neutralizes whatever is being shot. Thawne, that's a whole other book. Thawne is, he is the organic consciousness engineer for Victor One. And basically what that means is he programs the organic mind of the ship with things of, you know, anything that could go from people who are coming to visit and their likes and dislikes, because the ship actually takes care of you when you're there, to any kind of, if there are ambassadors or dignitaries or things coming, you know, for a visit and that kind of stuff. Or, you know, it programs, he can program and also drive the craft with his mind. That's also a big part of it. They drive it with their mind along the beams. You know, so that's why it's important that you're fully conscious, that you know, that you have this stealth sort of mindset. Teal is in charge of communications. And although sometimes Teal does program the brain of Victor One and the starship as well. And Zan is, he's in charge of what we would call intergalactic medicine. He really is there for the starseeds and overlooking the starseeds. Although there are many Zans on many different ships who take care of starseeds as well. So, but Zan is one of them, and he's on board Victor One. So he oversees, you know, his specific group of people as well. So they just see if you're on course and, you know, keep, you know, monitor you from time to time and, you know, things like that. So, but Teal being in charge of communications, she does classes on board Victor One that are also for Earth people, and Earth people can attend those classes by just, Victor One is still stationed, by the way, and at Lake Mead in Las Vegas, and And so they are pretty much there. They do travel around sometimes, but it's pretty much there. But it doesn't matter if you just connect your mind to Victor One and say that you would like to be a part of the night classes so that you can learn more about the universe. Just, you know, contact Teel, T-E-E-L, and just do it through meditation. And, you know, sometimes you may remember going, and I know for the longest period of time, Dr. Frank said that I was going to the night classes in my spiritual body. I didn't remember anything, but I do remember coming back in mornings with concepts and ideas that I had never thought of before. And then I started saying before I would go to bed, if I go to the night classes tonight, I want to start to remember and seeing, I want to see parts, I want to see the ship, I want to see the interior of the ship, and I want to see those things. So actually, I was actually granted those things. So I started to see Zan's quarters, and I was laying in the machine that they have there, which is pure white. It's like a giant oval tube, and it's pure white on the top and the bottom. It's a clamshell, and inside there are these long tubes of blue and green light, and that just comes down over you, and it reads everything in your body that's going on. You know, it's really quite phenomenal. And then they can correct things. So that you stay on track. Do you know, there's sometimes that if, you know, somebody's having, you know, a hard time, you know, body-wise, you know, that if it is feasible and it will, you know, if it's going to hurt their mission, that they'll help it along. So, and I know that they did that for me once when I, you know, was hospitalized and I was going to have an operation, and then everything was well the next morning. And, you know, and I knew that Teel had done a healing on me because I felt it the night before. And when I woke up in the morning, Dr. Frank was sitting right next to my hospital bed, and he said, Teel called me this morning and told me she fixed you right up. And she did. So... So, but, you know, but it's just phenomenal to, you know, see all of these things. You know, the exciting thing, I think, on the ship is the history coin machines. Did I touch on those the last time we spoke?
Yeah, a little bit.
The history coin machines, do you guys remember?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. Okay, good. So it's watching recorded history on actual coins in a 3D theater for one or a few people, where you can watch it in an actual theater size and watch it. You could sit, by the way, in the round, like their theaters are in the round. So if you're standing, or if this hologram of the life of Moses, for instance, you're watching, no matter where you're sitting, you'll see it from the front. So you'll never have a back view, you know. So even if somebody is speaking in a microphone before a group and they're looking forward, they have ways of projecting the entire thing as a 3D all the way around so everybody can see.
Wow.
So those are just cool little things, you know.
In theaters, I believe you said that the person can actually feel the emotions of what, it's not just a two-dimensional,
yes,
like watching a screen like we do. They you actually feel and smell and hear,
yes,
and, you know.
Yes, and the experience, like, you know, I use the example of Moses, for instance. You would therefore become a part of Moses because you just lived his life on all levels, and then you have an even deeper understanding of what another human being went through. So that is, like, so profound. So even imagine watching all of the great master teachers, and, you know, if you you watch the life of Buddha, the life of Christ, the life of, you know, all of those, or even somebody, you know, it's almost like when you pass away, you have your life review in a matter of seconds, but it's your entire lifetime and you grasp it and understand it. But the thing that hits you the most when you have that life review is that you feel the way that you affected everybody in your life. You feel what they felt. So if you were mean to them, you will take on those emotions and you will have to start clearing those while you're on the other side and making, making restitution with those people, mm-hmm. whether they're still on earth or if they are on the other side, to, you know, to heal all of those situations. And you start to understand what it is to be godlike, you know. Mm-hmm. Dr. Frank used to have a great saying. He said, Val said, being on earth is going from a clod to a god. I just love that expression, from a clod to a god.
You bring such a tangible description, because there's a lot of mystique, you know, around off-world beings, and you really bring it into, like, these are like people that you can relate to because they look human and they have just immeasurable amounts of love, and they do what they can for us without violating free will.
And the other thing is that I myself doing all of, you know, the writing and all of that, and as you know, the book I wrote, The Autobiography of an Extraterrestrial Saga, I Am Taran, all those years of writing, you know, and then working with these master teachers and these beautiful beings on the inner, on the interior, when they come, they also share their feeling body with me. And as I told you guys before, you weep and you cry and you sob because they're so beautiful on the inside. And, and the thing is that anybody can have this experience. All you have to do is sit and meditate and, you know, of course, you know, put up all your protection and all of that and then go to the master teachers and say you want instruction, you know, ask Teal if you can go to the night classes and all of that, and just, you know, open yourself up to these great spiritual riches which are at everyone's fingertip at a mere thought of bringing it to you. So, you know, and the more that you work with it, it becomes easier and easier and easier, you know, as time goes by. So so that's how I've sort of developed these, you know, these relationships, you know, with all of them is by doing this on a daily basis and that kind of thing. And I know, you know, there are times where I've been out and I've looked and I go, oh, there's somebody right off the ship. You know, and they'll look and they'll smile. You know, and I will tell you, this is the funniest thing ever. I took my best friend to Sedona, and I wanted her to experience it, right? So, anyway, she's a little squirmish at the all these, you know, stuff that she doesn't understand, and she's not into any of this at all. So she was a little squeamish, and she, you know, and we went to the hotel, we got in the car, and then we, you know, she's like, okay, like, don't freak me out. Don't, you know, she's like, don't, don't tell me about little gray men, you know. I said,
right.
You know, and all of a sudden we're stopped at a stoplight, and this kid on a skateboard, around 15 years old, blonde hair, right, you know, he jumps on a skateboard, and as he's passing the car, I said, well, you know, that's a hybrid. And she goes, no. And then the kid turned on cue, smiled and waved, and kept on going, and it totally flipped her out. So maybe he was a hybrid. Or maybe it was coincidence, but it was really funny.
Wow. Well, I think I want to kind of move the conversation here to your book, Autobiography.
Sure.
T. And if you could tell us a little bit about that in preparation.
Sure. Well, the whole book was actually written for Starseeds. So that's the number one thing. And it's also the thread, one of the thread of the mini threads in the book is about the Starseed program that comes out of Melchizedek, which is in the Mira system. And it is a outer space city of 490 planets. And each of them are called university planets. So all beings, when they transition from one planet to another, they go through Melchizedek. And if they go through Melchizedek, then, you know, one of the greatest honors, by the way, in the universe is to become a starseed and to go back to worlds that are dualistic in nature and to help to lift the consciousness. It is really considered one of the greatest honors in the universe if you are, you know, if you come and you do that, because, you know, you're doing it of your own free will and you're doing it for the love of universal kind. But also, you know, there is a whole school that goes along with that before you come and you incarnate, you know, if you want to, in the book we call starseeds messengers. So messengers come in, they're from the big picture it's called the Galactarian Alignment of Space Peoples and Planets, and the subdivision is called the Starseed Alignment. So it is aligning the starseeds to specific planets of the origin that they have chosen to come to. And then what their gifts are, and then working and learning about what the consciousness is of that planet and all of the different, like here on Earth, you know, we're a hodgepodge of you know, all different ethnicities and everything. So it's a really unique place, and it's really, really studied by people all across the universe. Everyone is really fascinated with this place. And, you know, so if somebody's going to go, if a starseed's going to incarnate into the Middle East, they have to understand what they're incarnating into and what their mission is and, you know, certain things like that. And, you know, they do come here and the Starship and other motherships as well in the Galactarian Alignment. They come and they measure the present Earth consciousness in several, in all the different sectors. So if a sector is more dense, they will send more messengers into that area, you know, to help break it up and to help rise that consciousness up a little bit. So Tehran, who the book is, it's his story, he is a teacher at Melchizedek at the advanced college level. He has taught messengers over many courses of years. He has been a messenger. He has come up through all the ranks of being a messenger. And so he teaches it, and a big part of the teachings are that when messengers come to a certain planet, if their destiny is to then become a mighty messenger, which is to come in with information for the masses, then they have to come into the planet and incarnate as every color, race, creed, religion, throughout the planet over a long, you know, period of time. The lifetimes are usually short. Sometimes they might go longer depending on their time frame. But when they come back, then they have, you know, it goes to that great saying, you know, for they have walked in every shoe. So they have a greater understanding and love for each and every person and religion and creed and ethnicity on the planet. So, and then when they come in their mighty mission, they, you know, they're doing things on a grander scale and, you know, that helps with everybody in the masses. So it's an incredible program. That's part of it. But the other part of the book is all about learning about what duality is. And the interesting thing about Tehran is born dualistic, is an anomaly, one in every 200,000 beings in the fully conscious universe will be born into it for several reasons. One, so that those who are fully conscious will stay understanding of beings who are dualistic, and also so that these people like Tehran who were born dualistic could therefore learn to raise their consciousness, you know, to also become a part of that. So that was the anomaly of why Tehran always wondered why he was chosen, you know, to become a teacher there. And that was one of the main reasons, is because he was born dualistic and he understood it, you see. So there's always a great rhyme and reason to everything that occurs, you know, across the universe. And then, of course, there is the greater duality, which is between Archangel Michael and Lucifer, which is also, you know, in the book. And I think, you know, people's favorite chapters, everyone has favorite things, but people's favorite chapters are the Lucifer chapters, learning who he is and all of that. And also Tehran, when he goes to the world of the great I Am and meets his shadow before he becomes fully conscious. That is one of the most powerful chapters also in the book. So if anybody wants to check it out, it's at autobiography of anet.com. And if they want autographed copies, they could just email me and I'd be happy to set them up with that. So, but those are sort of, you know, the main threads. So do you have any questions about any of those?
Well, I think...
How's that for an open question?
As a matter of fact, I have an answer for you, because our switchboard operator host, Chris, has some questions about your book, and so let's just bring her on real quick, because I know she'll get
it. Oh, great. Yeah, Chris has read it. She's reading it for the second time now.
Yeah. Hello, Chris.
That is correct. Hi, Craig.
Hey,
yes,
Chris.
I have to say that I loved the duality disorder, the name of it. I mean, it was, you know, that he came in with duality disorder. And that, you know, the characters in your book are believable. And that's what I really loved about it. They're not like, you know, just sort of spacey, floating characters. You know, they're real.
Right.
But one of the things, and you just mentioned this in passing, but I was wondering if you could expand on this, because I'm sure you can. You know, being in 3D and trying to ascend, you know, trying to shift out of that, I think a lot of us are still locked into that money thing. You know, it kind of keeps us enslaved in 3D. And so I've always wondered, what is their economy? And you spoke of it in the book, just like a sentence, that he spent 10,000 service credits to buy his beloved a new dress. And
right,
there you go. And I was wondering if you could talk about that a little bit.
Sure. You know, they don't have a monetary system or anything like that, but there is always an exchange of energy. And it's not like, you know, you do something for me and I'll do it for you. It's not like that. Tehran actually gains his service credits because he is actually doing work for the universe. And these credits are like dharma. It sort of like goes into his good credit account with the universe. So when he wanted to buy the special dress, which the designer would have gladly just given to him for Kyalina, he still wanted to exchange some of that dharma because it made him feel good and the designer feel good, and Kyalina feel good when she received the dress. So so that's sort of how, you know, that it's sort of set up. It's like a good karma bank account.
Mm-hmm. And they still have property, sort of.
They do, but, you know, here's the thing. You know, they have things, but the things don't mean anything to them because they could have anything they want. The ships, by the way, like let's say if you're sitting at a table, and I'm talking about this as in I Am Tehran. If you're sitting at a table and you want a glass of water, which they call Wella water because this water is purified in giant quartz crystal vats. So they call it Wella water because it has these incredible principles in it. They just think the thought, and the table actually, the molecules assemble and then create it. All of this is actually being done through the mind of the craft that they're on as well. So that's why the whole ship is alive. And it programmed, you know, it's like Thawne, for instance, on Victor One, if somebody was coming in, would program their resonance signature into the craft with their name so that they would therefore be identified, you know, and then therefore they could do, you know, if they wanted to have something to eat or if they wanted whatever, they could just think of it and it just, you know, it just comes up. And by the way, it is delivered in the perfect proportion for you. It is delivered, you know, it is so amazing. You don't have to think about, you know, we're all of us here on Earth are always thinking about portion control, right? You know, but it's delivered in that way, shape, and form. And, you know, there are certain races out there as well that eat only certain amounts of food. They're not into flavors and taste. They ingest the food because they need it and they know it's nourishing, but it's not a part of their daily life. Like, you know, I gotta say, I'm sorry, here on Earth I like to eat. So, you know, so I'm always thinking about, you know, okay, I just had lunch, what's for dinner? You know, but
sounds like my husband.
But the thing is that in some of those races, which is really interesting, they will eat just the right amount for their body, and then therefore their body doesn't have to do waste.
Mm. Wow.
So even though they still have those functions, and I'm sure at certain times it does, but it doesn't do waste like we do waste. Do you know, because they have the perfect calculations for all of that kind of stuff. Now that is also in other races and things like that. And as you start to, of course, rise up out of, you know, the more denser bodies, and start going into, you know, as you go up and start, you know, after you move out of the physical world, you're going to move into the light world. So, you know, that's a whole different set of learning as well. So, but yeah, it's really fascinating. So, like, let's say if they, you know, said, you know, I'd like to have, you know, a beautiful bed. They just have to think it, and it comes out of the wall.
Wow.
if they want to wear something, they just have to think it and it comes out of the wall. When they're done with it, they put it back in the wall and it gets dissipated back into molecules.
Hmm.
You know, they don't have dressers. They don't have, they just think of it, They think of it, it comes out, they're done, they put it back, and then, it's really quite extraordinary. Or, there are certain things like when Taran bought the dress, you can go somewhere, because that dress was, that dress was special because it was made of cosmic ribbons and it had the depth of the universe, so it was a very special dress,
Hmm.
So Chris, what's your question number two?
Well, you kind of answered that before, but I just wanted also to comment on the information about the Luciferian rebellion and the players. It's just the players.
Yeah.
It's a whole new perspective, and for me, and I really appreciate. I just wanted to tell you that I really appreciate it. It makes sense.
It makes sense, doesn't it?
Yes,
yeah, it does.
Yes. Once you read it, it makes sense. And I don't want to spoil anything for the readers because it is very much a book. It's a discovery. You're discovering as you read
yes,
it. And there's
yes.
so much in there. You have to read it more than once. At least I did.
Yeah, I still, even in sometimes if when I'm going back and just doing a read-through, I go, wow, God, and I just understood something on an even deeper level. And to just let all the listeners know, again, when I had my spiritual awakening when I was 26 and I'm 53 now, and the master teacher started coming to me, and over the course of a few years, I wrote a whole book about these experiences, and then I went to Mount Shasta. I had a major experience with the Great I Am, and I came back, and my main guide told me, what would you say if you wrote that book for yourself? And I said that I've learned an awful lot about myself, and he said, now it is time to sit down and write the real book. And from that moment, they said, do not edit anything. Keep writing until you don't hear any more words. So my experience in writing it was like reading a book. And I, when I even got to the Lucifer stuff, I had no idea that was coming out. And I kind of got a little freaked out about it. And they said, no, don't worry, it's fine. Just let it come out. And I mean, those chapters came out like really fast. Really, really fast. So, but then, just seeing that whole setup, all the questions I've had since I was a kid just about the universe actually kind of got answered in that book. And a lot of people write me and say, God, it answered so many questions I've had, and again, it's a gift from the universe. I just say I'm the little scribe who gets to sit here and let it, come through me. So, and so grateful and happy to do that,
Yeah, and there's a love story in there, too. I mean, it's got it all.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm reading this stuff, and I can't believe a man is writing this. This is really wonderful. Kudos to you. I have to go do my job again. I've got a caller that wants to speak to you, so
okay.
I'll talk to them. So thank you, Craig. Thanks for taking the time.
You're welcome, Chris. Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, we do have some more callers with a question, and just before we get to the next couple of callers, I wanted to ask you something. I was looking at some videos on YouTube that you have done,
yeah.
some trailers for the film and promotional things. And in one of the videos that I saw, and I just at YouTube I searched "Stranger at the Pentagon," and your name, Greg Campobasso. And I honestly can't tell you which one it was in. It was
people can subscribe to my page there too, so they get updates when I upload new videos as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So there was a still that was included in one of these trailer type videos, and it was a picture of the license or the badge of Nancy Warren, and it had the picture was like blurred out.
Right.
Who was a player in the story Stranger at the Pentagon as the government agent who was really helping.
She was a level 3 clearance secretary.
Well, I noticed, and we had talked about this privately, that on this piece of paper, was this like a fictional piece of paper, because it said name.
It's not the real one. She actually Dr. Frank, I believe she passed away in the late 80s or the early 90s. And Nancy Warren is a fictitious name. I don't know her real name. Dr. Frank never divulged her real name to me. But in the book, we know her as Nancy Warren.
Well, my point is that on there, it kind of looks like it's some kind of an official identification thing, but it said issued May 19th, 1955.
Right. We just made that up
that is Pleiadian lineup.
Oh, well, there you go.
So somewhere this thread is going through, when Dr. Frank left the planet, he left on Pleiadian lineup. And then I was looking at this video today, and I see Nancy Warren's piece of paper there, and it's May 19th. It's like, oh, my gosh, there's another one.
Well, you know, I do what I hear, and what I hear usually is coming directly through one of the crew members. So, you know, that might have been it. You know, when I was writing the giant feature film with Dr. Frank, what happened was after each draft, I would give it to Dr. Frank, and then he would, give it to Valiant, and then I would talk to Dr. Frank within the next week or so, and I say, did he have any changes or anything? And he said, no. He said he doesn't read anything. He just holds it, he absorbs it, and then he sits it down. And he said, just tell him he did a good job, right? And then I would wake up the next morning, and all of the changes would be downloaded into my head. I'd just go to the script and I would do it. And then I would turn in the next script. And that's how the process was. So I'm sure it was a date that was given that had some sort of significance. So,
well, it's like a little trail of clues.
Yeah.
Now, if you have the codes, and because of Lavendar's work, with the discovery of star markings and being able to decipher what these timings mean.
Yeah.
And there was also Valiant Thor landed on a star date, March 16th, which is, galactic degree in Pisces, associated with the Jesus and Mary Magdalene frequency.
Yeah.
And so that... There is a trail here, so I would just be. I'm going to be on the lookout now, because it's popping up all over in your work, stories. Coming on March 16th and leaving on March 16th. That just wasn't a coincidence. That was by design and by choice, because of the galactic frequency, which now we know of because of Lavendar. So.
And by the way, Dr. Frank did say, that Commander Thor did say when he was on Venus, his house, he said, looks like a giant glass house, and it sits on a lake with trees and stuff like that. And again, remember, they're on the interior of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Um, And he said that he would pace and walk that lake every day waiting for his Earth Commission. And he waited so many years until the commission finally came for him to come. So that when it finally came, he was so ready and so eager to be here. And his love for the planet hasn't wavered once, you know, being here all of these years still, you know, later. So, you know, there are many people that he's in contact with as well around the world and, you know, that sort of thing. I myself have not had the pleasure of meeting him in person. I've met him in dream states, and that kind of thing. But I know Dr. Frank told me he was, you know, he was in contact with many, many people around the world, and that lots of people were also physically invited onto Victor One over the years, you know, and Teal would teach them about the universe and that kind of thing. But, of course, a lot of those people never came forward, you know, don't come forward because they don't want to be ridiculed. So, but I think the time now that people will start walking and coming out and talking about it.
Well, certainly, and I had the thought that maybe when the full-length movie does come out, that somewhere on there's going to be a co-writing credit for Val.
Actually, it should just probably be him.
just had that thought. So we're going to pick up some more callers with questions right now. And
sure.
Next, we are going to be talking to Ralph as soon as I get your microphone open. Sweetie, hello, Ralph. Welcome.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. What a wonderful show. Craig, you're just an amazing individual. I've been trying to digest some of the things you've been saying. This is the first time that I've ever heard you talk. I missed your previous show. I apologize. But I'm really looking forward to reading your book.
Ralph.
Yeah, and there's another guy named Matt Kahn. Have you heard of Matt Kahn?
I haven't.
Okay, he's an intuitive, and he gets downloads from Palladians. And something you said about what goes on with us in our reincarnation, we go through Venus, and then to Source, and then back to Venus, and come back with our next mission on Earth. Is that what you said?
It's a lot bigger than that. Usually, when you leave a planet, you go back through Melchizedek, and then from Melchizedek, you get your next assignment. So, if your assignment is to keep coming back to Earth, that's one thing. Or if you're a soul who is not a star seed, but you originated on Earth and then you graduated from Earth, then you go back through Melchizedek, and then if you want to go learn unconditional love, for instance, then you could be assigned to Venus and enter into that consciousness and into that world and, you know, be there. And remember, you know, as you get into these other worlds and into the Pleiades as well, and Andromeda and all of that, you know, the life expectancy is quite a lot longer than, you know, what we're used to here on Earth. So, you know, each planetary consciousness sort of has its own, like, you know, like here on Earth, we know that what we came here to do, we're going to either do between 50 and 100 years, you know. On other worlds, it could be 1,000 to 1,500 years. Or in Andromeda, it could be up to 2,000 to 3,000 years. Or the Pleiades, it could be, you know, from here to there to there. So, or if you leave, even if you left your lost my train of thought, sorry.
Okay.
But you know, it's that kind of thing. So,
okay. Now, what do you think that? Well, Matt Kahn was saying almost exact same thing, except it's not Melchizedek; it's the Pleiades. And I don't know if there's a big difference or not, but it's interesting to kind of hear you talk about the same.
The Mira system is near there as well, is near the Pleiades,
okay.
And actually Tehran is a Pleiadian as well.
Okay.
So the book, yeah, I am Tehran. Tehran is a Pleiadian. So it's a lot of universal information, but, you know, like, even the universe is a hodgepodge. Everybody, you know, the different planetary people mixing and all of that. So even if your origin is the Pleiades, you could have, you know, Pleiades and, you know, Sirius and, you know, who knows what your bloodline is. You know,
okay.
Just like
now,
us on Earth.
Oh, yeah, right. I was kind of curious about your movie. I don't know if it's out. The Stranger at the Pentagon, is that out yet?
It's not out. We're in the just going into the visual effects stage. We have 68 visual effects, and by the way, the people can only get a copy of the movie if they donate, because the short film is just our springboard for investors to get financing for the major feature film. So the book Stranger at the Pentagon, the one that was written by Val Thor and Dr. Frank called Outwitting Tomorrow, and all of those are on the strangeratthepentagon.com site. Just click on Help Fund Short Film, and there's different tiers. All those books are out of print, by the way, and they're going for $100 to $300 on Amazon. So, you know, if anybody, wants to help that way, you can get lots of cool things, including, you know, kitchen magnets and, you know, that have Val Thor singing, you know, a copy of the screenplay, and Stranger at the Pentagon, I autographed to everyone and all of that. So you can check all that stuff out on that page as well and see all the videos on the homepage.
Okay, great. The thing I was really wondering was, why do you think that the powers that be, the government, would allow that information that's based on the documented truth, where Eisenhower met with an ET back in 57. Why do you think that at this particular time they would allow that kind of information to come out, and what do you think the agenda is as far as how it impacts our culture?
Well, I really don't know what the agenda is, but I do think, you know, as with anything that, you know, I think that, and merely, again, this is just my opinion, you know, I'm not basing it off of anything, but I do think that, you know, that it's been a long time coming, and all of this coming out is a great way to get the people of, you know, the people on the planet used to an idea of these, you know, universal beings and things like that, instead of the government just coming out and saying, okay, well, we've been keeping it quiet for quite a long time, you know. So, but, you know, one never knows. So, but it is, you know, it's just getting everything prepared. And then again, it's, you know, the people, you know, this is our world, this is all of our world, and all of us on it, you know, we're a part of creating what we want to see on it. So as if we all keep creating it, and we keep creating this love and bringing, you know, these loving beings towards us to join, you know, with learning about the rest of the universe, then that's what, you know, we're going to create. And that seems to be what's, you know, actually expanding, you know, quickly all around the globe.
Yeah, that's an interesting answer. Mario, do you have time for one more question for you?
Sure.
Yeah, well, switchboard is really lighting up, Ralph, so I want to try to get everybody a chance to talk.
Thank
to
you. Thank
sure.
you, Ralph.
Okay,
nice
thank
talking.
Thank you, Craig. Look forward to reading
all right,
you.
Bless
Take
you.
Care.
You
Thanks
too.
Thanks for calling, Ralph. Bye-bye. Yeah, we have quite a few people that want to talk. So just in preparation, if you could try to be brief with your question and give Craig enough time to answer, we'll get through all of them. So Next, we are going to be talking to Carol. Hello, you're on the air, Carol.
Hi, Ariel, and hi, Craig. I listened to your program last time you were on, and I purchased your book, but I haven't had time to read it yet. And I did make a donation on your for the video, for the short film.
Thank you.
And then tonight I was listening. I didn't get a chance to get on earlier, but once you said that the star seeds who come, it's the greatest honor to be here, to come to a dual planet, that struck an immediate chord in my heart and brought tears to my eyes. Because
I know. You're going to make me cry. Don't do it. It really and truly is. You have no idea how much the angelic kingdom, the powers, all of the beings, we're the true heroes, all of the star seeds are the true heroes, really and truly, and that, all the star seeds just really need to know how much they're loved and honored and respected, and that they are actually looked after at every moment in time. All star seeds are hooked up to a blue beam, which goes into the particular motherships or ships that are looking after them. So when things occur or happening in their life, they are looking over you. Those are your guardian angels.
You really do have a guardian angel.
Yes,
and I'm really connected with the Mary Magdalene and Yeshua and the Cathars and the Knights Templar. So I'm coming awake to what my mission is here at this time, and I really do appreciate your all the information you're bringing out to help us join together for our ultimate missions.
Oh, thank you so much. I got the chills when you said that about your mission. I know it's gonna come through for you.
I'm working on going from 3D to 5D reality and trying to bring that to others too, and being able to.
Once you finish I Am Tehran, the book is for starseeds. It has a major awakening code in it. I've even had people email me saying that they saw the words lift off the page, and that they got instilled with a learning beyond their comprehension that they knew would come out at a later date as well. So, so it definitely is encoded with more universal information and love as well.
And I feel the truth of that, and I encourage others to get your books and read them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carol.
Thanks for calling, Carol. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, so I am going to go next. We're talking to Jane. Hello, Jane. You're on the air.
Hi there. Hi, Ariel. Hi, Craig. This is Jane again.
Hey, Jane.
I talked to you the last time you were on, and I just I wanted to first tell you how excited I am about Stranger at the Pentagon and the UFO Conspiracy and Outwitting Tomorrow and Millennium 7 and my bracelet and my magnet. I got so many things in the mail. I was so excited. Thank you. I want to put a little plug for anyone listening that, if you donate some money, you get all kinds of fun stuff, and you just have to have this stuff. So send some money in, donate, and get these books. Okay.
Oh, thank you.
They really are.
These are the last of these books that are done. The publisher, when they went out of business, gave them to me.
I don't have one friend who thinks I'm sane, but
they really and truly are major collector's items as well as the posters, too. So.
Right. Well, I dog ear the pages, and, I don't keep them in really good shape if I were ever going to turn a profit, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
I would never sell, I'd never give them away. Okay, I have a couple of questions, and Chris and I kind of talked about this before I got on the air, but
in Stranger at the Pentagon, Strangest and Valiant sort of come across as being somewhat religious, you know, the God and the Son of God and all of that. And Chris and I decided that it comes across like that because it met Dr. Strangest where he was at the time.
That's right. That's absolutely right. It's, Dr. Frank was brought up through Bible school. His father was, mother and father were very religious, old Italians. By the way, his parents actually met Valiant Thor. That's a whole nother story.
Wonderful.
Yeah, which is a really good story that I couldn't incorporate into the screenplay because it didn't fit. But but yes, because of his mechanics, he writes like a preacher, so it comes out that way. But if you actually knew Dr. Frank. Dr. Frank was more about the opening, of the broader thing of the universe. So you have to you just understand that where somebody was writing from at that point in time
That's
why it does sound a bit, in certain areas it does sound a bit religious, but you have to remember that Valiant Thor is not religious. They are all of the religion of love. That's their religion. And that's my religion on this planet. So.
Right.
And
I'm going to get your book, The Autobiography, just as immediately as I can. I can't wait to read it. I was going to get it and then I forgot about it until you guys started talking about it again. But I have one other question that because I don't know, bothers me to think about being in a place where you don't have the big contrast of drugs and alcohol abuse and overeating and, do these beings, Thor and his buddies, what do they do for like recreation? Do they exercise? Do they sing?
Yes,
do they do drugs and alcohol to excess?
No, they don't do drugs. They don't do alcohol. They do have a gym. They have pools.
Okay.
They have jacuzzis.
Okay.
They have children. Val has a daughter. His wife's name is Deena, D-E-E-N-A.
Okay.
And they named her Valdina. So she's probably in Earth years somewhere, I would say, in her late 30s to early 40s now. But she would still look like she was 25 to 30 because, she lives in that environment. So.
Right.
And
I'm going to ask you one other quick question, Craig, if I might. What about free will?
Sure.
Now, does everything – I've always thought that only humans had free will. Now, that's obviously not the case.
No.
Everything
and everybody has free will, even angels. That's why some of those angels turned way back when. So, here's the thing.
That's what it started sounding like. And I love listening to you because – you speak so normally about it's what seems like most people would think is absolute crazy, and it's so right on, and it's so refreshing to listen to this. But it's just great. I can't wait for this to come out. You were so funny about the government saying, we've been keeping something back from you guys. we have a little bit of info we've been hiding from you for the last little bit. Anyway, I think your movie will help pave the way.
It will. Nobody wants to come out and admit they made a mistake when it's been a mistake for a long, long time. So, and you know what? And here's the thing. There should be no blame. There should be no animosity towards any, those were all other administrations, and those were, there is none. All that there is right now is right here and right now, and to love everybody, as you would want to be loved, and move on with the information and quit blaming people and pointing fingers.
Right, right.
you know, all that stuff. Yeah. But just one quick thing. Just because you become fully conscious doesn't mean that you don't feel. You feel more when you become fully conscious on a heightened thing. So when for instance, Teal and the crew and Val, when they see these horrific, now, and remember, they're able to see everything that's happening on the planet. So when they
right.
see horrific things done to other people or done in, you know, or children, you know, who are dying because their parents died, or you
well,
know,
yeah.
or things like that.
Bombers.
They go, they weep on such a
yeah.
deep, deep level because they're here, you know, they're here and they're witnessing these things, but they're not a part of it.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
It's a whole different thing. So, but
so
anyway, I just wanted to throw that out as well.
Do they experience anger and depression?
Sure.
Okay.
Well, I don't think they experience depression, but they do experience anger, but it's not, you know, even Jesus experienced anger, and that was the most fully conscious
well, yes.
man we ever
yeah.
had.
Yeah.
So,
right. yes.
you know, so yes, and even, you know, Sai Baba, when he was on the planet, you know, if he got angry, you didn't want to be around because,
right.
you know, he got angry, but then it was
yeah.
over. You know,
right.
so,
well,
but,
and
you know,
that's a good, that's good to know because I like anger. I think we ought to keep it. And I was wondering about them.
Yeah, no, you don't lose any of the, you don't lose any of the, what we call universal spiritual tools. You just now have an ability to know how to use them for the benefit of universal kind instead of for the benefit of yourself.
Right. Okay.
Well,
very
well
you.
Said,
thank
and we do have
so
to
much.
Move on here.
Yep, I'm moving on. Thank
okay,
you.
Okay, big kiss.
Thank you.
Great
bye.
Talking, Jane. Bye.
Bye-bye. So we have two more callers, so I would like to try to keep the questions as brief as possible so that Craig can have more time with you, and we are going to be talking to Karen next. Hello, Karen. You're on the air.
Hi, Ariel. Hi, Craig.
Hi, Karen.
Hi. I have a question. When you were beginning your awakening, did you experience or are you still experiencing having all these numbers of just repeating numbers all over you in all facets of your life? For example, if you're driving, every license plate will either be 333-555-999. The time will be 333. You wake up in the middle of the night, it's 444. It's not
yep.
just happening to me, it's happening to all my three kids, and all my three kids are
yep.
very little. But they come up
yep.
to me for no apparent reason and go, hey, Mom, it's 333. Or, Mom, it's
yeah.
444. So I
yeah.
just want to know, what does that all mean?
Well, I think, you know, I, for instance, see 1111 every day or 111. I'm always
yep.
seeing the ones. Sometimes I do see the 333. I think that they're all a part of the starseeds coming in, that there are codes that are also written within. And I think that those codes also help to, it's almost like a trigger that helps the awakening process. And do you think all three of your kids are starseeds?
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure.
Okay. So, you know, so when they're that age, they're going to become much more aware of all of these things. So those numbers are actually waking them up, and they may start having experiences like when I was young, I went on motherships, and I would be, you know, I remember being taught with other children, And I remember then, you know, when I was around 10, I saw my first angel waking up in the morning in its astral form. Then I, at the same age of 10, I was sitting in the bathtub. I looked into the nozzle, and I was pulled all the way out into the universe, my soul, into the heart, the beat, the pulse of the universe. And all the questions, who am I, where did I come from, all of that went through me and came back in me. But then after each of those experiences, they got erased until my real awakening at 26. And then I remembered them, or if I did remember them, I never talked about them. But then at that point, I could talk about them. So, you know, just be, you know, aware, because your kids will, you know, they might start, having little experiences, you know, because they're so much brighter and smarter than when I was a kid, you know, because the consciousness is more raised now. So the kids coming in now, they are brilliant little beings. Oh, my goodness, man.
They are. And you know what? I've noticed with the three kids, they have not 1 ounce of violent tendencies. They just have this feeling of acceptance for every race, every religion. And it's very nice to see that whole group of kids are coming in right now.
Yeah, yes. Amazing.
Thank you.
They chose
thank
you,
you.
Mom.
And thank you,
you're
Arielle,
welcome. Nice talking to you.
Thank you. Likewise.
Thank you so much, Karen. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye.
We have one more caller. And Vanya, hello, sweetie.
Vanya, how are you?
Hello, I'm well. How are you, Craig and Ariel?
Good.
Oh, I'm so glad you called in. I loved your email you sent me from the last show. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I got my package. Thank you so much.
Oh, good. It got there. Wonderful.
It did. I already read pretty much majority of the stuff. And I do have a quick question because I was so affected by all of this. Is anybody are you still working with Valiant? Is he in touch with you? I mean, this is...
Well, it's not like I see them in person, and I get to go hang out on the ship. I mean, you know, things are through experience. Sometimes I'll go... you know, in my spiritual body and I'll remember, or I'm pretty cued into them telepathically, but when I'm actually working on the project, the two that are the closest that I communicate with are Dawn and Teal, because they do that. And once in a while I will hear Valiant Thor come in and give a quick something, but it's usually Dawn or Teal. But you can talk to, you know, you can just put out messages to them and, you know, you'll get messages back. I mean, my dream would be to go, of course, you know, to go and meet them. I've met other people that have gone and met them and other people that have met Valiant Thor. And, you know, it's they just say it was one of the most extraordinary experiences of their life, you know, and some of them got to actually go on Victor 1 and on the starship. So
I'm hoping I'm going to be one of those lucky people.
Yeah,
I'm just putting it out
too.
There if anybody's listening.
I just, you know what, I'll say if I get a go, I'll say Ariel and Lavendar's group, they get to come too.
Oh, that's awesome. That'd be great.
Wouldn't that be fun?
It'd be
it really and truly would. Yeah, really and truly would. You know?
I do kind of have a little bit of a concern. Is anybody, like, so nothing has really been happening since the Eisenhower administration, and he came back, Val returned, and he's working behind the scenes, I guess, going back and working in actual everyday enterprises, like businesses and such kind of passing.
Well, no, I mean, he's overseeing, you know, he's one of the overseers of everything that's going on, you know, here on Earth, but it's also integrating, you know, starting to integrate, you know, it's working with all the star seeds, all the, you know, all of the different children coming in, the indigos and the crystals and the, you know, diamond children, and there's, you know, just... so much. that's going on, but it's also, you know, working in conjunction with Melchizedek and the entire program, which also Yaniah, who is another created being who's on Victor One, is directly from Melchizedek. So he is a permanent fixture on the Victor One crew. So, and they go back and forth from Victor One to the starship. And the starship is gigantic from what Dr. Frank says. We actually, we have it in the posters, you know, there's artist renderings of it. And, of course, Victor One and the blueprints as well. So so his job is all-encompassing with the universe and with raising, you know, helping the planet to raise its consciousness. But, you know, I don't know all of who he is working with, but from what Dr. Frank had said when he was alive, he was working with, you know, many individuals all around the Earth, and was even in contact with several governments and things like that as well. So, and that could be very well today.
I'm hoping so, because I don't want this to be lost, and I do hope that the mission is on target, because it was lost through the administration of Eisenhower and Nixon, and it affected me deeply that there was such a long period of time that nothing actually really was occurring and getting out to the people, and I was wondering how it affected him and his team. You know, they came here with a mission, and it almost flopped in a way, I guess you could say.
Well, it did flop. It did flop.
I didn't want to say
and,
that. But.
And really, you know, here, you know, to sort of bottom line it is, you know, it was turned down, and I know for a fact that Teal wept, and I know that many of the crew members wept. Valiant was very disappointed. And when he came back, I do believe that when he was, you know, he was towards the end when he met Dr. Frank in December of 59, he was only here for about another 3.5 months.
Right.
And I do think the reason he contacted Dr. Frank is because he was open to, you know, to these things in the universe and to him, and that he chose Dr. Frank as a grassroots campaign to get it out there into the world of his and their presence. And Dr. Frank toured the world, you know, speaking about this, and spoke in even Korea to, like, Dodger Stadium-type, you know, people coming to hear him speak. They were so, you know, riveted with the information.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but it all, you know, it all works in divine time. So, you know, even they know that. So, you know, so Dr. Frank, you know, he finished his mission, and you know, I'm helping to continue it. You know, I'm just so blessed that I knew him. If you guys knew him, he was like, he was as kind as Santa Claus, and you just wanted to hug him and never let him go. I mean, everybody felt the same way about him.
I don't doubt that.
You know?
I don't doubt that.
Yeah, yeah, just the most kindest, loving soul ever.
Well, thank you for your light that you bring, and thank you for bringing this out, SATP. I'm looking forward to getting the CD. That kind of rhymes.
Yay, I know. Yeah, so we're going into visual effects, and they said they should be done by the end of the year. And then we just have to do the finishing of post-production. So hopefully we'll have it done by, you know, March of next year. So that's what I'm looking for.
I'm looking forward to that. Thank you so much, Craig, for all your hard work.
Oh,
and
thank
well.
You, Vanya. Bless you. And
you too.
And love to everybody up there in Canada.
Thank you. We love you too.
Yay.
Thanks so much for calling in, Vanya.
Thank you, Ariel.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
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 Well, talk about numbers. There was like 2 minutes and 22 seconds left, so we really kind of have to wrap it up here. I cannot believe the time has just flown by so much. And
wow.
Just going to have to come back again and again until we can get all the stuff that you have.
I would be happy to. I love coming on and talking to you guys. So.
Well, I certainly want to encourage everyone, Starseed listeners, this is a project that will benefit the whole planet in opening up doors and bringing this information to light. So please, I encourage everyone, whatever level of donation you can make to help this project complete on time would be greatly appreciated. Go to strangeratthepentagon.com. Also pick up a copy of Autobiography of an E.T., of an E.T. saga, and you can do that at autobiographyofanet.com. And also there's craigcampobasso.com, and all of those things are written up in the show announcement. We just got a minute left to go. So, Craig, I'm just giving a big, giant hug. And thank you so much for coming back. And we
thank you so much, Ariel. I so enjoyed being on with all of you. Big hug back, and hopefully we'll all see you on board Victor 1 in the movies. I love that line.
Oh, yes. Yes, see you on board Victor 1.
Victor 1 in the movies.
From all of us here at Starseed Radio Academy and to Valiant Thor and the whole crew, thank you so much for helping Craig bring this story out. We'll be back next week. And, Craig, thank you once again so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Bless you all. Thank you.
So good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.